Welcome once again to Zero Prep, 2 minutes to set up pod, also known as Mighty White's podcast, episode 344. I'm Jack, as always, joined by Casey.
Yo.
How's things, mate?
Yeah, not bad, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, all good. Nice to know that we had plenty of time to prepare. You've been done at work for several minutes.
Yeah, all fine, probably.
Yeah. But it appeared that we were able to prepare well enough to get a 1-0 win against Fulham.
Yeah, and the result I think we deserved.
Yeah, well, I mean, it says a lot. You can't see the notes forever, but the first question is, deserved win?
Yeah. You would not have thought, looking at Fulham, that they were on the sort of run they are at the moment.
Yeah, well, they were like 7 unbeaten with like 4 of them wins.
Yeah, like they're on a pretty good run at the moment, but they just, outside of the first 10, 15 minutes where I thought they moved the ball around quite well, I didn't think there was a whole lot to them. There was maybe like a 2-3 minute stretch in the second half where they kept possession for ages, but didn't ever really go anywhere with it.
Yeah, they did play some nice stuff to get out from the back at the times that we really pressed high, which we did a fair bit in this game. When they got it right, they were able to move us around quite well and get out. But it seemed like they'd get out into midfield and they'd take 4 players out of the game. And 10 seconds later, they hadn't gone anywhere and we were back in a shape. They never really took advantage of it.
Yeah, like I know. So I think we lose something in as much as I know a lot of people are critical of Noah Okafor and his pressing on that left-hand side. I think one of the things that works against him is that Anton Stach has done such a good job when it's been his role sort of covering
that. Yeah,
when
he pushes up and gets into that space.
Yeah, so I think he was a bit of a loss there. But yeah, like you say, they played a few nice triangles out, and as you said, it would get to Emile Smith Rowe and that was about it, really.
Yeah. Four of the bits of the play that they had, and I can't remember exactly what the sort of possession was. I think they edged it. But chances-wise, it was definitely us. I mean, they only had, I think, one shot on target that was a nothing one. And the only real chance, the only like scary moment they had was when Darlow comes out of his goal, misjudges the bounce, and just heads it straight back to him.
Yeah, is that the one he could have waited and it was going back to him in any way? Trying to remember.
No, that one was early in the first half where he came out for one that that had so much pace on it, it'd have got there easily. No, this is in the second half, he like came out for one. Strouk, I think, had it covered anyway. And if he just stays in his box, I think Strouk just heads it back to him. But either way, it's getting cleared and he comes out, sort of shouts for it, makes Strouk get out of the way and does a me-esque header.
Yeah.
And luckily, I can't actually remember who had the shot now. I'm going to say Smith Rowe, but that could be a lie. It was sort of a looping left-footed effort that went plenty wide.
Yeah.
We may as well do it now. Like, I saw a lot of, and including Daniel Farke saying he kept a clean sheet, so it's brilliant. Like, don't get me wrong, if he's dropped Perry and Darlow's in, then Darlow should stay in. Because he did one thing wrong that didn't cost a goal, that's fine. But I did see a lot of, oh God, the marked improvement. He didn't have a lot to do. I'll give you that his long kicking's better, because it is. But it was, I think that we probably win that game 1-0 regardless of who's in goal.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the goalkeeper situation, as I think we said before, it was a bit odd the way he spoke about it in the press conference prior to the game. I think it's probably better now that at least he's sort of explained it a bit more post Fulham, in as much as saying that he probably needed the timeout. And one thing I will give Farke credit for is he's been more decisive about this than he was with Melier. It did look at a point like he was going to live and die by picking Alan Melier. So whether it's a case of, in Farke's mind, he's got sort of a set period of time of keeping Perry out of the team, or if it is a, this is Darlow's position to lose now. I don't know, but he did speak of it as just him needing a bit of time. He's had an injury, possibly still settling in. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think, I mean, if I think Darlow's got the shirt now, and I think if he doesn't screw up, he'll probably play up until the Birmingham game. And then Perry will come in for that. And if Perry has a really good game, maybe he keeps his place. But we'll see from there. We probably will need a goalkeeper if we can, if we find somewhere for Perry to go in the summer. But that'll be a summer problem. As I really liked quite... There was a few performances that I thought were good in this. I think just about everyone had Ampadu as man of match.
I think I... Yeah, I had him down as man of the match. I thought for what wasn't a good game of football, I think it is quite... It was lacking quality. Was the game overall...
I think it's for one. I do think on the preview I might have said not one for, it won't be one for the neutrals, which I think is one of the few, one of those nice things where I think we're right. But the, yeah, the lack of any, you could tell in the crowd. To be honest, thank you to Harry Wilson for doing that incredibly cynical foul, because it got the atmosphere going.
Yeah, it just. I thought Ethan Ampadu showed a level of composure that most didn't during that game. Mm. I don't know if I could call it, you couldn't call it a midfield battle. It was a midfield...
squelch.
Yes, I will take that, yeah. Not a lot in the way of good final balls and like I said, it wasn't even as if either team was getting into many good positions. I know we had more than they did.
Oh, we had far more. Like, again, XG, not everything, but theirs is like 0.3 something, and we were about 1.5. And like, I kind of like Strauch had a pretty good headed chance from a corner. Justin had a decent one breaking into the box that he put straight at the keeper. The Goodmanson one, where he could have driven it low across the box, either for a cross or a shot, but he just spooned off into the cop, was quite a good opportunity.
Brendan Aaronson's lob.
Oh, I mean, that, right. But Bendy, you've been great lately, so it's all good. But that was a horrendous attempt. If the ball is dropping like that in front of you, straight down, you don't try and side foot it on a half volley. You just put your laces through it before it hits the ground. Like, that's how you strike that ball. It was a terrible decision and terrible execution. But again, he was pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, we went with the 3-4-3. It was, and obviously we had the late news that Biol and Stack were out.
Yeah. Which really worried me, to be fair.
Definitely forced a reshuffling. And the one thing I did feel comfortable with going into that was I was like, ah, well, at least Ampadu and Gruev have played a bit in midfield together. Mm. So I was fine with that. And then what were we... I'm trying to think now. Was it... it was Justin, Roden and Strauch as a back three.
Yeah, and I thought James Justin did really well in that role.
Yeah, he looked good. Good to have Jaden Bogle back in as well.
Yeah. I said, that back three, playing Justin as a right centre-back, I was pretty happy with. I thought, despite a couple of bad decisions in the final third, I thought Goodmanson was excellent. Without the late assist for Ampadu, I could have been persuaded to give Goodmanson man at match. I think he was second. Like, I think he could have gone either way, and that pushed it over the top. Like, Roden and Strauch were just good right through. Gruev was largely solid. Calvert-Lewin had a pretty good game. As you said, Okafor was a little bit quiet. I wasn't... I wasn't surprised when he was the quote unquote by Farker standards early sub, because Nonto came on for him in the 70th minute.
Yeah, and bless him, the first thing he did, pick up the ball, try to beat two people and smash it, and try and smash a shot that was never on.
Yeah, but I still think he should be getting more football than he is. But I don't think he was brilliant or anything. The more interesting subs were 81st minute, Tanaka for Gruev, so you've got more attacking options in centre mid, and more importantly, Mecha for Bogle. So going back to the back four and pushing an extra man forward. And it did say a lot that our subs were that, and their late subs before the goal were like him taking Jimenez off for Kusiasare, who I don't even know anything about, but and taking Harry Wilson off for Issa Diop and going to a back five themselves.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, given what they'd been creating, I wasn't at all surprised. There was very little in that you could say about Raul Jimenez in that game, other than he's a whingy sod. But
I think that there is a player that you could say even less about, just judging by your reaction to their performance. And I don't know if you remember this that you said in the ground.
I absolutely remember this, because I went, who's that big bastard they brought on?
Yeah, who's that? The question was, right after, what was the subs? It was their subs. They made two subs. It was Kevin for Sessegnon, and the other one was Sasa Lukic went off for Tom Kearney. And you said, who's that big bastard that's just come on? I went, where? In midfield, well, Tom Kearney, he's not that big. He went, no, the big ass lad next to him. I went, Sander Berge, he started. And you went, no. Wow, really?
Yeah.
He had made zero impression on you at all.
About an hour in, just going, God, he's big. Has he been there the whole time? I completely get why they went to the back five at that point. That, you know, they're playing.
They were offering nothing
with ten minutes left.
With Kevin, when he came on at their place, really made a difference and pushed onto the back foot. I don't remember him doing a single thing in this game. Same for Josh King, to be honest, who came on for Smith Rowe, and I really like Josh King. I think he's a good player, but
yeah, I think one of the disappointing things. Well, I suppose it depends how you. I was surprised at the amount of fouls and shirt pulling and niggly challenges from Fulham.
Yeah, they got four yellows, which I don't know if this is true, but it feels it. That feels like the most the team's had against in a long time. We've had a lot of games with not many bookings, either way.
Yeah,
they were really snide. And I'm not even so much talking, like the Harry Wilson one is just as blatant a foul as you can get. And if he just pulls him down, no one goes mental. He did jump at him a little bit. It's one of them that they're on about making into a red card. But it wasn't that was the challenges that were winding me up in the crowd. It was all the little late ones that were just seemingly constant. I know statistically he gets some of the most fouls of anyone in the league. But like that Sasa Lukic is a right snide little fuck. He's quite a good footballer. I'd probably really like him if he played for Leeds. But
I mean, obviously, he was quite lucky to not have got a second yellow for kicking the ball away.
Yeah.
And I can only assume it's the fact that the referee and the linesman didn't see it because it was blatant.
I owe Ethan Ampadu a slight apology for what I said in the ground, by the way.
Yeah, you were a bit scathing about his decision-making.
He must have thought that the free kick was at the other end of the pitch and threw the ball back. I still think he should be paying more attention to the game he's playing in that case. But I believe, because I saw him start to throw the ball, I'd said it before he even did it. And I think that my exact words were, you fucking idiot, what the fuck are you doing? You stupid prick. Because I could see what he was going to, and then he got himself booked. But it was a miss. It was still a yellow card, but it was him doing, him not paying attention rather than him being an idiot.
Yeah.
And I did call him an idiot.
Yeah, he made up for it.
Yeah, by least. Being the best player on the pitch.
I know Fulham are obviously missing players, but they were not good to watch. I was amazed sat there thinking that they'd won as many out of the last, you know, six or seven games as they have.
It's another one adding to that theory I've got that no one outside of like three teams are good.
Yeah,
but it's all just really homogenous, and which is probably because the league is. I don't know, because we'll have to see, because you're not going to see 14th in the Premier League play 14th in La Liga or Serie A. I don't know if the standard of the league is a bit lower this year or if it's higher but really even, which is making it look resulting in a few poor games.
Mm.
But when you're having a game like that where it's, I mean, we're on top, but, you know, going 5 minutes left, if someone had said it ends 0-0, you'd win. Yeah, it sounds about right. But we have the absolutely outstanding world-class substitute appearance of Lucas Metcher.
The pass completion.
Came on, basically did nothing right for about 6 minutes. Then nearly scored with a header from a corner, but was very unlucky. It was a really good header. And then did score from an Ampadu cross to win the game. I mean, it's a fantastic sub-appearance, even though your first 5-6 touches were pretty awful. Because weirdly, after that first header, he then, even a couple of little touches he had were good. He just needed one good touch to get himself going.
Yeah. He has to say, I think, what was it, first three touches were just all passes given away. And then, yeah, really close with the header. And the chance he takes is, it's absolutely fantastically dealt with.
Yeah, it's a really good finish. I think is that five for him this season?
Yeah, I think he's hit five.
Not just for a free transfer. A free transfer who won't be on the most ridiculous wages in the world, who came in, as soon as we signed him, we were like, well, that's the backup.
Yeah.
If you get a free transfer backup striker and they've got five goals in January when you're bottom out of at league, when you're bottom end at league, that's excellent.
Yeah, I think for the most part, you'd say we've got everything from him that we would like to. I think he's probably a very good option for us to have off the bench still. I would quite like to see him a bit more partnered with Calvert-Lewin, but you also can't argue at the moment that the way he's picking the team is getting results.
Yeah. It'll be interesting. Obviously, there is an argument for doing it against Everton, but I'm not sure that's the right one to do it against. Their centre-half, so it'll be Tarkowski and O'Brien.
Mm.
So I think I'd probably rather have the quicker, more buzzy lads running about him than that one. It could be, though, that Metcher doesn't play that much, given that even though I am standing firm in my this isn't going to happen belief, Leeds have had a bid now actually rejected for Jürgen Strand Larsen, apparently of like 33 million in add-ons. There's two questions for you, KC. One, where the fuck did we get 33 million? and the easy one, if we do have 33 million, have a better way to spend it?
Is there a better? I mean, the you're clearly looking at the options. Whilst I would like it, I just taking out the context of the season right now, on a purely, do I rate him? Would I like him in the team? Yes. Mm. Would he start playing alongside Calvert-Lewin? Does Calvert-Lewin become a really expensive substitute? Well, not expensive transfer-wise, but wages-wise, does he become an expensive substitute? Is it Jorgen Strand Larsen and Brendy? Yeah, it seems an odd one when we really need a left back.
Yeah, it's a weird thing. Like, he will. I know that he hasn't been great this season, but he's been playing for Wolves, and he's had some injuries. I'm more looking at like how good he was last season and thinking, yeah, it's a good player. It's a good player that suits the system completely. And he's only 25 and he doesn't have the injury records that our current strikers have.
Hmm.
So if the option is there to do it and they think, no, we're signing him because he'll play nearly every game for the next 5-6 years, hopefully, then it's probably worth doing it. But I wouldn't want to drop Calvert-Lewin. I'd want to go to the two big lads then. And
yeah.
I am looking at where we are right now and thinking, for 30 million, can you get a left back that can maybe also play left centre back? And like, I'm not sure right now that we actually need to push it that hard on the PSR. Because this is the last year of it, and then it all changes, doesn't it?
Yeah. And I think as well, if you generally look at what we've spent on our defenders, and I know there is a bit of a premium in January, but given what we were spending in the summer, I would like to think we could probably get a couple of players in for that.
I mean, I think you definitely can. It's just if they're convinced this is the main man for the next 5 years, then do it. If you can do it, do it. But I aren't 100% convinced. I do not think it would be a bad signing in any world. I'm just not sure it's right what we need now. I do wonder, my tune would change a bit if they managed to structure this in a way that really doesn't screw us over, where it's like, oh, it's actually a £5 million loan fee, and then we pay 35 in July next year. Next year? This year? We've gone past. In the summer. We'll see what happens with it. I'm not... Part of it might just be me not wanting to get excited about it, because I still steadfastly, I don't think it's going to happen. I think Mateta's going to leave Palace, and I think Palace are going to buy Strand Larsen.
I mean, if you're Palace,
I think that's what
you've got to sign someone. The other thing I think that was spoken about on was it on the Square Ball when they had Graham Smith on, and sort of the talk of, is Joel Peru used as, you know, did they attempt to use him as a make weight, in as much as, look, you will at least play the second half of this season as a Premier League striker.
And it can be your main man in the Championship next year.
Yeah, you're a guaranteed starter next year. And whether that... Because I think at this point, you know, if you're selling Joel Peru just for straight cash, I mean, I know the Championship is getting ridiculous now transfer-wise, but what do you say, about 10, 12 million?
Something like that.
Like, I think
we paid about 12, I think. There was add-ons, and as we got promoted, and he was top scorer, we will have met those add-ons. So it's probably 15 or 16 by now. But
yeah. It could potentially be more then, but whether you can negotiate something like that. But because, as I said, I don't want to lose Joel Peru unless someone else is through the door. And again, for me, it makes more sense for that to happen in the summer than now. But if you have the opportunity to get someone who you see as being a long-term player, then
yeah,
I can understand bringing that timeline forward a bit.
Yeah, because the other side of it, in terms of when I'm worrying about the money and stuff, is this does sound like it'll be roughly 40 million for a player that was having £65 million bids on him a few months ago.
Yeah.
So, like, we'll see where we are. But, yeah, I'm refusing to get excited until, like, something really happens. It would be, if nothing else, it would be a real statement of intent, which we have seen before, and they usually don't go well.
Was Georgie a statement of intent?
No.
Bizarrely. George,
look, I love Georgie. He's one of my favourite footballers to ever play for Leeds United. But he wasn't what we needed at all at the time. It just happened to be good afterwards. Like proper statement of intent signings. Like Rio Ferdinand, as much as a prick, was a real statement. Highest rated young defender in the country, spend £18 million and just sign him.
Oh,
that one worked because he was good. The problem was like Robbie Fowler was as well. And as good as he was injured and then he ended up leaving for no money. And like Jean-Kevin Augustin was a statement of intent.
A good one is David Healy.
Yeah.
That was a good statement of intent.
Yeah. Who's a good player in our league? Let's nick them.
Yeah. to end that one on a positive. But yeah, like I say, I think I do have that worry of if Goodmanson picked up an injury. Yes, I know Justin can play there. I'd rather have a bit more of a ready-made left-back.
Yeah. Well, we'll do that as a starting thing for talking about the Everton game. Because Goodmanson has apparently been struggling. Farker mentioned it in the press conference. But, like, that he missed a couple of training sessions, but as a precaution, and he should be okay for it. I know Justin Gumbler, that would be the move, that he comes in. And then probably Bornau comes back in. Because Beals, although he's apparently ahead of schedule, he's not going to be back yet. So, one question I have is, if Goodmanson was out and Justin played left wing back, does Roden go back to the right with Bornau in the middle, or does Bornau play on the right and Roden stays in the middle?
I think it's probably Bornau on as the right centre back. Mm. I suppose if you part of your skill set is you can also play as a right back, and now that we're seeing these games where the right centre back can push forward a bit more, it makes sense. I suppose for me, I think in terms of if you're the centre back in a back three, I think I would trust Roden more at that role than Bornau, and that's not a knock on him. No. I just think Roden is better suited to it.
Yeah, I think the main reason I asked is because I really don't know. Mm. Like, I think Roden's probably got a little bit more recovery pace, which would make me want him to be the outside one.
Yeah.
I see he'll be the one stepping out, so he'll need to get back quicker. But yeah, I thought Roden looked really comfortable as the middle one against Fulham.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm not sure which way I'd go, to be honest. Gun to my head, I think I'd go Bornau middle, but like 55-45.
Yeah.
I don't really know which. Hopefully Goodmanson's fit, because that makes everything easier. Just keep the same back five that we had against Fulham. I really like Justin as a wide centre back. Like, no, I don't think he gets it in the head of anyone in the Roden and Beal Strouk back three. But I really like Justin as the main backup for those outside positions.
Yeah, and like I say, he's this last sort of 6 weeks or so, I think he's really settled into this team wherever he's been needed.
Mm. Stack was back in training, so he might be available by the sounds of it. Still no Beal. Apparently James is on the grass, but he won't be ready yet. So it sounds like, outside of Beal, it sounds like we've got a fairly full contingent.
Yeah, it's not bad. I was just looking ahead, because obviously weekend after we've got Arsenal. Mm. I don't know if Stacks may be a player that you give it a miss for this one. And
it sort of depends how much he does really trust Gruev.
Yeah, and can't say I had any complaints about Gruev from the Fulham game. I mean, what they're a 4-2-3-1, aren't they? or Everton.
Almost exclusively, yeah. And they definitely will be for this, because they can't really go to a back three, because Branthwaite's still injured, as far as I can tell. And Michael Keane's suspended for that hair pull that he got sent off for.
Brilliant.
So they'll be... I mean, theirs almost picks itself at this point. Pickford in goal. Because Jake O'Brien's having to play centre-back, it'll be Nathan Patterson at right-back, O'Brien and Tarkowski at centre-backs, Mikulenko left-back. It's always funny to say this, Garner and Gay in the midfield, which always makes me think of, I only said one player because it's Idrissa Garner Gay. But yeah, James Garner's been pretty good this season. And Idrissa Gay is a good player. Jack Grealish has like a fractured bone in his foot or something. He is out and out for a bit. But Illiman Ndiaye is back from AFCON. So he's, I would think he'll just come in on the left. They then, they have a couple of options that they could play off the right. I'd probably guess they'd go Dwight McNeil.
Yeah, he's someone that I'd forgotten about, if I'm being honest. Yeah, I'm just looking at their team as to sort of who else there is.
Yeah, I mean, there's Tyler Dibbling, but he isn't playing a great deal.
No, and the reports from, was it the Wolves FA Cup game that he played in weren't great.
No.
But I also think it's stupid that he's sat around not playing football at the moment.
Yeah. Tierno Barry has been playing up front ahead of Beto and has actually started scoring some goals, so he'll almost certainly keep his place. Apparently, I did read something that Kane and Dewsbury Hall might be back available, but I'd be surprised if he throws him straight into start. So they've been playing Harrison Armstrong, who's a young kid that came through the academy.
Mm-hmm.
19 years old. He's had a loan at Derby and then last season and then half a season at Preston to start, where he basically played every week at Preston. And they've brought him back and started playing him.
Yeah.
I saw him play for about 20 minutes the other day, and he looked pretty lively, but I don't know enough to see, but he has been playing as the 10 for the most part. So I think he'll probably keep his place.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's been in the last couple of weeks, hasn't he? So, I think you could be right there with him staying in.
Yeah, I think I can't really see anyone else starting. I mean, if Seamus Coleman's fit, they don't like Nathan Patterson very much. So if Seamus Coleman's fit, he might get the start right back. But that's about the only thing that I think looks likely to be a change. Illiman Ndiaye is a great player.
I think cause he's one of the ones. Because I think I remember first seeing him when he went to... He had that really good season in the Championship with Sheffield United, didn't he? And
he was at Sheffield United, yeah.
They won the league and he left?
He went to Marseille, which makes you wonder what sort of person he is. I think it was Marseille that he went to from Sheffield United. Yeah, and then back after a season to Everton. But yeah, he was like... I was just checking because I thought it was... Like, Sheffield United got him off Boreham Wood. Like, before he was even playing senior stuff for them. And he had a loan at Hyde United and then just was playing at Sheffield United.
Yeah.
It was a weird out of nowhere one, but he is a proper can do something out of nothing player. And you need one of them, which is why I'm so sure he'll be the one that starts over now Grealish is out, because they'll need a spark.
Yeah, I mean, I think he was playing at 10 anyway, wasn't he? With Grealish on the left. So I think, like you say, if Grealish is out, he's probably the obvious choice to slide across.
Yeah, because even that that Charlie Alcaraz, he's out as well, who would be another option in there. I think it kind of picks... I'm guessing... I wonder if I can find it, because when I think about their squad, I don't think they can have much of a bench at the minute. Because, I mean, like, their last game, they won 1-0 at Aston Villa, which is a cracking result for them. And the team for that was basically the team we just said, except Grealish is on the left. And that Merlin role played instead of Idrissa Gueye because Gueye was still at AFCON. In fact, I did watch a bit of this game. That Merlin role looked pretty decent, but I can't see him staying in the team. But yeah, like their bench was Adam Aznou, who's a like young fullback that they got off Bayern Munich, if I remember rightly, who a lot of the scouting tactics people really like. Seamus Coleman, Tyler Dibbling, Beto, and then Mark Travers, who apparently that's where he is.
So that's the Marcus Bettinelli moment, isn't there?
Yeah, and then T. King, who I don't know who it is, R. Welch, who I don't know who it is, and E. Campbell, who I don't know who it is. So like, it looks like they're not having a massive amount of squad depth at the minute.
Yeah, there were times when I thought our squad was a bit thin, but then yeah, you see those their bench like that are.
They were also they only named 8 subs as well. Last time out.
Yeah, it's a bit like when I looked at Man City's bench for that Champions League game. Although it does have Jeremy Doku on it, there were also like 3 names on there I just didn't know.
Yeah.
So it's a weird one. I'm still trying to get my head around the fact that we are a point closer to Everton than we are far away from West Ham.
Yeah, it's starting to get quite congested, isn't it? Like
we are as many points behind 7th place Brentford as we are from West Ham, who are 2 places below us.
Yeah, it's obviously Leeds won. That's the main thing. Us and West Ham fans will be having the similar thing of going, that's a great result. It's a shame they've won. Like, yeah. They'll have come out a last-minute winner away at Spurs and thought, get in, and then seen we've got a late winner. And we did the same.
Yeah. After last weekend, could have done with Arsenal beating Forest, but a point's not the worst thing. But yeah, once you'd seen that West Ham had won, and goddamn Spurs, what are you even any good for?
I mean, if they want to lose again, then we win so they can just be below us.
Yeah. It'll be fine. They'll be changing manager soon anyway.
Yeah, I am. Like, you can't look at that and not start thinking, oh, them above us. You know, Palace 3 points above us and they're basically in free fall. But because we aren't, you know, that's something we can worry about in April if it happens to go well. I just want to see that gap at the bottom increase. Do you think that there's anything odd that we might see from Leeds? Like, if, let's say that Goodmanson's fit, but Stack is probably on the bench. I think the only thing that, if Goodmanson's fit, Darlow, Bogle, Justin, Strout, Roden, Goodmanson, Ampadu, Aronson, Calvert-Lewin basically picks itself. Yeah. And then it's who plays centre mid, I think probably Gruev, and who plays off the left if Aronson is nominally off the right, slashing midfield as an 8. Which would probably be Okafor, but you could argue Kanonto.
He's not going to start him, is he?
No.
He's never going to start him. I can't see it springing too many surprises. Like Seth, I think it mostly comes down to the fitness of...
Yeah. I mean, like, you could definitely make an argument for it being Metcher instead of Okafor. Like, I certainly wouldn't mind seeing that. I just think if there's a team where I'm less bothered about it being that, it's this one. Because I actually think... I listened to a bit of the interview that the Arsenal family guys did with an Everton fan. And the thing he was most scared of Leeds is when we press high and like really get after him. Which made me think, yeah, the free, making sure Aronson's right up there for the press. Even if he's in the 2 and like Tanaka plays in the midfield role.
Yeah.
He's probably the upside, probably worth it.
I suppose the problem is if you're From an attacking point of view, I look at it as if you're going to have Ampadu and Gruev starting, then you can have a really solid sort of four in the middle and allow either Rodanon or Bornau to push on a bit further on the right-hand side.
Yeah, especially if everyone's fit and it is Justin.
Yeah.
At right centre-back, and that just really frees up Bogle to properly go at Mykolenko, and I don't particularly rate Mykolenko defensively.
Yeah, and then... I'd really like to see us go with the front two at some point, but again, I think you do have the case of, look, we keep playing either one centre forward or Aronson playing higher, but you know, the results are still going that way when you're not playing Calvert-Lewin and Mecher, or starting them both in the same game anyway. I'm not a massive fan of Mecher on the left. I don't think it works that well.
No, I didn't mind it so much for that. I know that he had a bit of a nightmare with his first few touches. I didn't mind it so much in the Fulham game, because we were going for it and he wasn't playing left wing. He was playing more up front.
Yeah.
Because everyone was pushed up so high anyway.
It was a force. It was a force against four, basically.
Yeah. I liked it less against Man United when he was really seemed to be, he kept getting the ball on the left and losing it.
Yeah. It is something I would like us to sort of try out a bit more, especially in sort of in situations similar to Fulham, where look, there's not a lot of football actually going on here. Let's just get it in the mixer, percentage football. But yeah, I think ultimately it'll still be Okafor that ends up starting this.
I was just checking messages because I was assuming that I would get some with some scores on, and I have. As per usual, because it's my fault for sending the message quite late, not heard back from Connie yet. It will be us winning, I can tell you that. Both Alex and Little Danny have got a 1-1 draw. Benny's got a 2-1 win. What are you fancying, Casey?
Based on nothing at all, a 2-2 draw.
2-2 draw. I'm just trying to think how they're going to play it. They'll have a more solid midfield. They don't really create a lot. I don't often go for that, but I'm saying 0-0. Yeah, I think this will be a lot like the Fulham game. I don't think... this is a Monday night game, so I'm assuming we're probably going to end up watching this in the pub.
Yeah.
I think that any of the non... If there's anyone who's just gone down who isn't a Leeds fan and they've just gone because the mates are going, I think that they'll find themselves on the phone quite a lot. I don't think this is going to be much of a game.
No. The longer the season goes on, the more I do look at us and think, are we the ones spoiling the football? Like, are we the bad guys?
We're not the bad guys. We haven't got skulls on his hats or anything.
Horses are terrible people.
Yes.
I'm
not a horse. I'm a brute.
I'm trying to think how this one will play out. But yeah, I think it will be fairly... It's odd saying this every game. I think may end up in a 2-2 draw, but again, I can see it not being great quality. But I don't know, actually, because we've not been giving up the big chances as much, have we?
No, we've defensively been really good lately. There was a stat that the Athletic put out earlier today. We've conceded the fewest shots from errors of any team in the league. I think it was 8 all season.
Which I'm a little bit surprised about, because I thought there was enough early on.
Yeah, it wasn't the fewest goals, because we've conceded 3 goals from those 8 shots.
Yeah.
But it does seem that we've really tightened up back at the back, which it always gives you a chance. I say that because I think it's going to be a relatively poor game, and I'm going to stick with 0-0, but I look at that and I think, right, who is the something out of nothing players? And if we pick Ampadu Gruev, then it is probably not going to come from like something special from midfield. So it's probably just Calvert-Lewin. And for them, they've probably got two, because it's probably Ndiaye or McNeil.
Yeah.
There's not going to be a massive thing. So, yeah, I'm going to say 0-0, but a goal from a set, like something from a corner, wouldn't surprise me at all. They're both, we're massive, they're massive as well. Yeah. The one thing that I'd be interested to see is, if it is 0-0 after 70 minutes, I'd very much like to see Buonanotte in this game.
I'd forgotten all about him already.
I think he was right. He got it right against Fulham. He didn't bring him on, got the late winner. I think this is more of a sort of game that'll suit him. I think there'll be, because Everton are at home, if it's 0-0 with 20 minutes left, they're not going to sit back and settle for a point.
Yeah.
They'll step out and there'll be more space. And then that's when you probably want someone like him on.
It's getting to that time of the season as well, where I'm now going to say West Ham are playing Sunderland in the early kickoff.
Are they the early on Saturday?
Yes.
Early tomorrow morning? Right, cool. I'll probably watch that then.
So, again, it would be ideal if Sunderland could keep up their form and win this one.
Yeah, if you have the fixtures up, because I haven't looked, probably still worth seeing who Burnley are playing and who are Forest playing.
Let's have a look. Let's just go back to the Premier League one. Because I looked ahead for West Ham, because when we've got this run, they've, as I said, they've got Sunderland tomorrow and they've got Chelsea next week.
Right.
So whilst we have Arsenal, it's a game I would also expect Chelsea to get points from.
But so, by the way, Burnley are winning.
Who have Burnley got?
Spurs at home. Burnley are winning that and Thomas Frank will get sacked. Forest are away at Brentford.
Yeah, Brentford have got a really good home record. Brentford are seventh.
I was just going to correct you and say, no, Brentford have just got a really good record. You didn't need the word home.
Because I watched that game and I don't believe it, Jack.
Yeah, Brentford are, and let me make this very clear, 3 points off the Champions League.
How?
I don't know. Because Keith Andrews, who I did nearly call Mark Andrews then, because Keith Andrews is apparently a much better coach than he is pundit. Now, admittedly, if he'd have just like never opened his mouth the entire season, he'd probably been a better coach than he was a pundit. But still, like, you know, you cannot argue with them being seventh. It's fucking good going.
What a weird season.
Yeah. What a not nice fella. he might be nice. I'm basing that on him being a little bit annoying when he's in a studio. That's not fair.
I tell you, imagine if you walked into a bar and you saw him and Andy Hinchcliffe together.
Well, I mean, if I had to talk to one of them, I'm picking Matt. I'm calling Mark Andrews again. I'm picking Keith Andrews every single time.
See, you're getting mixed up with Mark Andrews. I get him mixed up with Keith Tracy, who,
yeah,
very different person.
Google it.
I
have double reason for mixing up with Mark Andrews. It's not just that there's a wrestler called that. There's also the Baltimore Ravens tight end is called Mark Andrews as well.
Do they call him Andrews?
No, but they should.
They should.
We've also got a new head coach, Jesse Minter, who, based on the one NFL YouTuber I watch, is a good appointment.
I don't trust Americans called Jesse.
I mean, it's not unfair. But we will wrap up in a second. Have you listened to Propaganda?
I've heard the clip.
I'm dead serious. If you haven't and you listen to the Jesse Welch bit, have like, if you've got a stress ball or something in your room, genuinely have it. I was waiting at a bus stop coming home from work and I was legitimately annoyed. Like, oh God, I'd like, just shut the fuck up, man.
He's all PR. He's all
complete liar. But yeah, I mean, hopefully we get, I mean, anything out of this will be good, but we'll know, because we play last, we'll know how important a win versus not losing is by the time kickoff happens.
Yeah.
But it's an away game in the Premier League that isn't Wolves. So a point is a good result.
Yeah.
Cool. That will do us for episode 334 of Mike Wright's podcast. We'll be Saturday. We'll be back one of the days, probably early next week, in theory. Are we both off Monday?
Yes.
So maybe Monday before. Monday's the game. Tuesday, we'll have to see. I think I can do Tuesday. We'll have to see. But yeah, that'll do us for episode 344. I've been Jack, see ya.
I've been Casey. Have a good one.
In a bit.